All right, so contract law, right? It can be a real beast sometimes,
Yeah.
especially when you toss in these complex financial agreements.
Oh, absolutely. It's easy to get lost in the weeds, you know?
Exactly. And that's why we're tackling this case today, Brown Marks Associates Limited versus Emigrant Savings Bank.
Yeah, this one's a classic. Really gets to the heart of some crucial concepts.
It does. And it's not just some dusty old case either. It's still super relevant, especially for understanding those, what do they call them? Express conditions precedent.
Oh, yeah, those are biggies, and how they play into that whole idea of substantial performance.
Right. So, like, think about it this way. You're a borrower, you're almost there, you've met most of the requirements for a loan, but maybe, just maybe, you haven't checked off every single box perfectly.
The question is, do you still get the funding?
Exactly. And that is precisely what the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals had to grapple with in this case.
It's trickier than it sounds, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So, to really appreciate the court's decision, we got to lay out the backstory here. Take us back to 1978. What was going on with Brown Marks Associates?
Okay, so picture this. 1978, Brown Marks Associates, they're looking to renovate an office building. Pretty big project, right? And they need some serious cash to make it happen. So they go to Emigrant Savings Bank, hoping to secure a loan for, get this, $1.1 million.
Wow, that's a chunk of change, especially back then.
Oh, for sure.
And it wasn't just a straightforward loan agreement either, was it? I mean, there were a couple of different funding levels on the table.
You got it. You had the big one, the so-called ceiling loan, for the full $1.1 million. But then there was also a smaller option, what they called the floor loan, for $750,000.
Okay, so two tiers, got it. But I'm guessing there were some strings attached to getting that full ceiling loan amount.
Oh, you better believe it. To snag that full $1.1 million, Brown Marks had to meet some pretty specific, pretty strict requirements, and they had to do it all by the loan's closing date. No exceptions.
I'm starting to see where this might be going.
Right. And one of the most crucial of these requirements, the big one, was securing signed leases for the renovated building.
Makes sense. The bank wants to see some proof that the project's going to generate income.
Exactly. And the target. They had to hit at least $714,447 in annual rental income from those leases.
So that figure was basically the make or break point for the full loan.
You nailed it.
And did they make it? Did Brown Marks pull it off?
Well, that's where things get interesting. They didn't quite get there.
Oh, so close, but no cigar.
Pretty much. They might have been close, you know, maybe just a few leases short, but the bottom line was they missed that minimum rental income requirement by the deadline.
Ouch. And what did Emigrant Savings Bank do when they came up short?
Well, they held their ground. They said, "Look, you didn't meet the condition for the ceiling loan, so we're not obligated to give you the full amount." They were still willing to go with the smaller floor loan option, but Brown Marks, well, they weren't too happy about that.
So what happened next? Did they just walk away? I'm guessing not.
Nope, not a chance. Brown Marks decided to fight back. They sued Emigrant for breach of contract.
Classic legal move. And what was their main argument?
They basically said, "Hey, we substantially complied with all the conditions. We were so close to that rental figure. That should be good enough, right?"
They thought they'd done enough to deserve the full loan amount.
Exactly.
And how did this initial legal battle play out?
Well, the first round was actually a win for Brown Marks. The jury sided with them, which, you know, honestly, it's a bit surprising when you consider how specific these financial contracts usually are.
It is kind of unexpected. So the jury basically said, yeah, Brown Marks did enough. But I have a feeling this isn't the end of the story.
Oh, not even close.
Yeah.
The district court stepped in and said, "Hold on a sec." They decided to overturn the jury's verdict.
Oh, wow. Why? What was their reasoning?
The court felt that the instructions given to the jury, especially regarding that concept of substantial performance, were flawed. It was like they thought the jury might have gotten a little confused about the legal standards.
So it was less about the facts of the case and more about how the law was applied, or maybe misapplied.
You got it. And not only did the district court toss out the jury's verdict, they went a step further. They granted summary judgment in favor of Emigrant Savings Bank.
Okay, now for those of us who aren't legal eagles, what exactly does summary judgment mean in plain English?
Basically, it means the court can decide the case without a full-blown trial. It's like saying, "Look, there's no real dispute about the key facts here, and the law clearly favors one side."
So a pretty decisive victory for Emigrant.
Yeah, you could say that. But of course, Brown Marks wasn't giving up that easily. They appealed the decision, taking it to the next level.
Which brings us to arguably the most important part of this whole case, the concept of express conditions precedent. law students out there, listen up. This is something you definitely want to understand. Break it down for us. What are these express conditions precedent all about?
Right. So an express condition precedent, think of it like a gateway, a hurdle you absolutely have to clear before any obligations kick in.
Like a prerequisite.
Exactly. It's something specific, explicitly laid out in the contract that must happen. No ifs, ands, or buts.
So no wiggle room for almost or close enough.
Not when it's an express condition. Yeah. And in this case, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, they were crystal clear on how they saw that minimum annual rental requirement.
They didn't mince words, did they?
Not at all. They said, look, that $714,447 figure, that's not suggestion, that's a condition. It's right there in black and white, a requirement that had to be met for Brown Marks to get that $1.1 million ceiling loan.
And this is where Brown Marks's argument about substantial performance really fell apart, right?
Exactly. They kept saying, hey, we were close, but the court said, nope, close doesn't cut it when it comes to an express condition precedent.
So is that like getting a 90% on an exam and expecting full credit when the professor said you need a perfect score?
Perfect analogy. You either meet the condition or you don't.
And this is all about Alabama law, right?
Yep.
The court was applying the specific legal standards of Alabama in this case.
Exactly right. And under Alabama law, express conditions precedent, they demand strict compliance. It's black and white. No gray areas.
So no rounding up.
Nope. And this emphasis on strict compliance, it's not just some legal technicality. It's actually super important for the whole financial system to function smoothly. Lenders, they need that certainty. They make their calculations based on those defined conditions.
If you start saying, oh, close enough is good enough, then it throws a wrench in the whole system.
You got it. It introduces a ton of uncertainty.
And the court even quoted directly from the loan commitment, didn't they? To really drive this point home.
Oh, they did. They said, and I quote, the language of the loan commitment here expressly provides that compliance with the minimum annual rentals provisions is a condition to receiving the loan. That word condition, it carries a lot of weight in this context.
It's not just a casual suggestion, it's a hard and fast rule.
Precise.
So why do you think the court was so adamant about rejecting this idea of substantial performance in this particular scenario? I mean, wouldn't there be situations where being close enough should count for something?
Well, in this case, the court felt that applying substantial performance to this kind of express condition, it would actually go against what the parties originally agreed to. They said it would frustrate the parties' intent as written.
So they were really focused on upholding the contract as it was written, respecting the original agreement between the bank and Brown Marks.
Absolutely. They looked at the contract and said, look, the bank laid out these requirements as prerequisites for the full loan. To change that now would basically be rewriting the deal.
And it really makes you think, why are lenders so insistent on strict compliance with these types of conditions? It's not about being difficult or anything, right? There's got to be a logical reason.
Oh, definitely. It boils down to risk management, plain and simple. These conditions are there to protect the lender, to give them some assurance that the loan will be repaid. It helps them assess the borrower's financial stability, the viability of the project.
So meeting those conditions provides a level of comfort, a safety net for the lender.
Exactly. It reduces their risk. And I've even seen cases where something as small as a missing signature on a document can hold up a huge deal worth millions for months. It just goes to show how crucial these conditions can be.
Wow, a single signature. That's wild.
It happens more often than you think.
So we've talked about the breach of contract claim. But Brown Marks, they didn't stop there, did they? They also threw in an accusation of fraud against the bank.
Yeah, they did. They argued that Emigrant's refusal to give them the full loan, that it was fraudulent somehow. But proving fraud, that's a whole other ballgame. It's much tougher than proving a breach of contract.
So what's the legal standard for fraud in Alabama? What did Brown Marks have to prove to win that claim?
Under Alabama law, to prove fraud, you got to show that the defendant, in this case, Emigrant, had a clear intention to deceive at the very moment they made the promise. And at the same time, they had no intention of actually keeping that promise. It's all about their mindset at the outset.
So it's like they made the promise knowing they wouldn't keep it.
Exactly.
And what did the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ultimately decide about this whole fraud claim?
They basically said there's just no evidence here to suggest Emigrant acted fraudulently from the get-go.
So just because they didn't end up giving the full loan, that doesn't automatically mean they never intended to in the first place.
Right. The court made it clear that simply failing to fulfill a promise later on, that's not enough to prove fraud.
And they even had a quote about this, right? Something about failing to perform a promise.
Yeah. They said, Failure to perform a promise is not of itself adequate evidence of intent to support an action for fraud. They considered whether emigrant might have had other reasons for backing off, like maybe interest rates changed, and the loan wasn't as appealing to them anymore.
So maybe they got cold feet, but that doesn't equal fraud.
Exactly. Cold feet and fraud are two different things.
Makes sense. So for all the future lawyers out there, what are the big takeaways from this whole Brown Marks case, especially when it comes to contracts and financing?
Well, first off, clear drafting is everything, especially with loan agreements. Lenders, they need to be super precise with their language, especially when it comes to conditions precedent. No ambiguity allowed.
And for those who might end up representing borrowers,
Negotiate. Make sure those loan conditions are realistic, something your client can actually achieve. And remember, when a lender calls something a condition, they mean it. It's not a suggestion.
And that whole distinction between breach of contract and fraud.
Super important, especially in Alabama, where the bar for proving fraud is very high.
You can't just say they didn't do what they promised, therefore it's fraud. There needs to be much stronger evidence. So to wrap this up, the court in Brown Marks was pretty clear. Emigrant Savings Bank wasn't obligated to give that full ceiling loan because Brown Marks didn't meet the specific condition about the rental income.
And the fraud claim.
Yeah, that didn't fly either. Not enough evidence.
Exactly.
But this case, it raises a really interesting question, doesn't it? I mean, today's financial world is way more complex than it was back in 1978. We've got all sorts of crazy conditions baked into financial instruments. So how do these principles from Brown Marks, you know, the emphasis on clear conditions and strict compliance, how do they apply in this modern landscape?
It's a great question. And with all these algorithms and stuff, it gets even more complicated.
Absolutely. So for all of you listening, as you delve deeper into the world of law, remember this case. Brown Marks provides a great foundation for understanding how critical these express conditions precedent really are.
Oh, yeah. This stuff comes up all the time.
It does. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
My pleasure.
See you next time.